back with episode 808 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and there's a lot of little stuff going on all over the place, isn't there, John?
Oh, yes, I would say that that's one very honest way of putting it. So we had indicated that we would be back yet again in 1 week, and then things happened. So we'll just leave it at that. Scheduling things came up, and, it occurred to me as we were trying to figure out when to record that, no offense, guys, but the return of Twin Peaks was right around when we were supposed to record. Yeah. I was missing that. So
it
that
was very interesting.
It was. It was wondrous and strange. But we'll be getting into that in a couple episodes. Right now we're playing a little bit of catch up, but yeah, this is, as we have indicated before, this year we've been definitely just kind of rolling with some scheduling punches, so to speak. Lots of times there's just very full weekends, especially as on my end, I've got, graduations coming up and so forth. So yeah, there's been some things going on. So we're just, in a little bit of an abnormal scheduling pattern right now, but don't worry, you'll get this, roughly at least every other week, usually some in between that we can get. So, it's all good. We're definitely still pushing forward. And we are getting into a point now where in the next couple weeks, the summer schedule hits and things are a lot lighter, thankfully. So, yeah, we'll be able to do a little bit more than just talk about episodic discussion, which, there's definitely some interesting things to get into there. But before we do any of that, this show is going to be more about what we've been up to the last couple of weeks. So, Gary, yeah, any highlights that you have for us here?
I did finish now my, my sixth Star Wars book in a row. I finished reading Thrawn finally. Uh-huh. And I have so many Imperial thoughts running through my head. I feel like doing cosplay on it, which is not my typical thing to do, at least not in that type of that universe. But it's been purveying my thoughts, entering my dreams. And I hear the Emperor's maniacal laugh from time to time, and it worries me. I really enjoyed the book a lot. I felt they did a reasonable job to capture Thrawn in, his original sort of personality, because this is technically a reintroduction of the character since he was purged in the extended universe purge, right. The great extended universe purge. And so they brought him back, and I felt they did a reasonably good job of keeping him true to character. Although I do have to say, I think Rebels has done a slightly better job with capturing my concept of him. So that being said, I think where Thrawn shines is who he's working against. And when he was working against, Luke and the rest of our normal band of rebels, I felt from the original books, I sort of felt that he had a more challenging opponent than he did this time around. So it felt like he was sort of underused. And that's probably my only regret about the book. It came through fine. Some of the ancillary characters worked out reasonably well, but it was a good book. It didn't end quite where I expected it to end. On the other hand, this was not going to be the fall of the Empire by any means. So, things were going to somewhat remain in the status quo as the book came to an end. So, overall, it was a good read. I'm glad I read it. I missed Thrawn, but it did lack a little bit of the flavor. I guess I'd compare it to if you like, you have pizza, but you have your favorite pizza parlor. So it was okay, but it wasn't my favorite place to go to. But you had read it as well, and not too long ago, right? It hasn't been out that long, John.
Yeah, I read it a few weeks ago, and I guess the only thing I don't disagree with you, but the only thing that I kind of kept in the back of my mind was that the Thrawn that we had seen back in the original novels that are now part of the Legends line or whatever they're calling it this week. He was at the end of his arc, if you think about it, right? He had risen through the ranks. He had gained a great deal of experience. He was at the top of his game, really. He was leading the Imperial Remnant, and he was basically the top dog at the time, and he had, decades of experience and so on. Where the Thrawn we see now is literally at the other end of his career. He is, while definitely a celebrated warrior of the Kiss and so forth, he is still not as savvy necessarily with the Empire and so forth. Not only that, but it precedes what we see on Rebels. So like you said, Rebels actually shows him a little bit more in the mode that we're used to, but this is even earlier than that. So it made sense to me that he would be a little less polished and maybe a little bit more, maybe naive is not the word for it, but inexperienced. It's just not the same because he is on the other end of his career. know, he's very early in now. He's still learning a few things. So.
I didn't think of it that way, but you're right. That's a good way to approach it.
Yeah, it kind of took away the whole thing of, you know, why is he not the ultimate badass that he was in, you know, Heir to the Empire and all of that. But yeah, that was probably still my favorite of the Star Wars novels that are out in the new canon. Although I am about to start Catalyst. I don't know if you have read that.
I haven't. I saw it, but I've been holding off. I don't know. I might need a breather from the Star Wars universe. I haven't gone through 6 books in a row now. It's a little. Yeah. I think I might need a little bit of a palate cleanser before I go back in. So.
Yeah, for me, I actually had the palate cleanser because I did finish Star Trek Force in Motion. It's a Deep Space Nine novel. Nice little character study. I talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago when I started it. But yeah, it ended pretty well. It's a little bit of a dark story because it is dealing with characters that are a little bit psychologically damaged. But I think I mentioned that when it's prominently featuring Captain Maxwell from the Rutledge, you know, O'Brien's old CEO,
yes,
who kind of went over the deep end against the Cardassians and so forth. And it says a lot that you knew exactly who I was talking about.
I enjoy the actor as well.
So definitely has some darker undertones to it because it's a damaged character and so forth at the center of it. But definitely a good novel. I think that it's a slow here and there, but it's nice to see something with a relatively confined scope rather than trying to be some big space opera type thing. This is really a very character-driven story. Beyond that, I also read an Assassin's Creed book. It's actually supposed to be a young adult book. It's the second in the Last Descendants series called... I'm blanking on it now. That's not good. Tomb of the Khan. That's what it is. It's basically the middle chapter in the trilogy that is put out. But what I found interesting was that it was not necessarily a dumbed down version of the story, but I found this one even more enjoyable than the ostensibly quote unquote, you know, adult oriented novel that Christy Golden put out last year called Heresy. That one I struggled with a little bit because I felt like it was just not quite working for me. The character mix wasn't there, but this has, even though it is teenaged characters, I think that they blend the various aspects of Assassin's Creed and the Assassins and the Templars and all that, the canon of that, into the story well enough that it actually is, to me, a better representation of what's enjoyable about the franchise. So I it was a quick read. I probably read it in about a little over a week, but yeah, it was not bad. I would recommend those two novels that are out so far. I don't know when the third one comes out, but they're good. If you're a fan of Assassin's Creed and you want to read a novel series that actually isn't more than just a retread of what's in the games, that would be a good one to go to. Also, because of the fact that, you know, Attack on Titan is on the air currently, I did go back to the manga volumes that are the, you know, concurrent with this story arc that's in the second season of Attack on Titan, and kind of I've reread the chapters before watching the episodes that are represented or representing those materials. So it's been very interesting to see how the adaptation works, because sometimes it is dead on, literally word for word, frame for frame, and then other times they mix things up just a bit in order to have the story flow a little bit better in the visual medium versus reading it. So it's interesting to see the way that they do the adaptation, even though for all intent purposes, it all adds up to the same exact stuff at the end of the day. Even if it's rearranged a little bit, they are sticking very close to the source material.
Well, you know, I'm finding I'm getting exposed to more YA material as well. And it's, honestly, some of the stuff is really, they call it YA, but it's really, I'll use the term censored, and I don't mean that necessarily with the weight that is sometimes implied, but, you know, they trim out some of the sex, they trim out some of the language, and you basically have an adult story otherwise. It's just they don't include some of, as I said, some of the racier scenes or some of the language. Even the violence seems to be there most of the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have to wonder, they're falling under this YA sort of category because it does exist, but really it is a lot of it seems like it's just slightly tamed down, par for adult material for the most part.
Yeah, and I think that even some areas of what would be considered YA literature, it's not toned down at all. It's just that it's from a teenage perspective versus an adult perspective, so to speak. But I think that there's a lot of truth to say that the stories don't necessarily change very much. It's just the character, the viewpoint character changes, perhaps. You know, so I think you're right that certainly the violence doesn't get toned down. If anything, that because they, you know, there has been such an expansion of the YA genre, it's certainly dystopian type of stuff that they really go into, you know, gory detail almost sometimes. But it's if it's toned down, it's not toned down that much. I'm used to reading an awful lot of, like you said, the Star Wars novels, the Star Trek novels, and those kinds of things. And there's a certain standard that they follow, too. I mean, they don't get too salacious. It's even back in the days of, you know, the early pocketbooks era for the Star Trek novels, when it, you know, they were bringing in authors who were, you know, blatantly adding in things that normally would not be in a Star Trek novel. They really didn't push the boundaries that far. I think there was maybe one book that was infamous for having like nude characters or something like that, which was, oh my, at the time, you know. Nowadays, mm-hmm. We don't know that anybody even blinks, but like Dwellers on the Crucible or something like that. But again, for the fact that I can do that off the top of my head. But at any rate, yeah, I agree with you. I think that sometimes the line is blurred, and it might be reading level and so on and that kind of thing. But I don't think that there's such a distinction as there used to be, where it was like, oh yeah, you're going to be reading a dumbed down story. It's like, no, you're not. You're just going to be maybe focusing entirely on the story instead of some of these, you know, quote unquote mature items that sometimes are kind of unnecessary anyway.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Let's see, beyond that, what have you been up to other than reading Thrawn?
I'm still practicing for that Boy Scout hike to New Mexico, so I'm roughly averaging 15 to 18 miles on a weekend with a 50-pound pack on my back. So so while my people at work say, oh gosh, you had off the whole weekend, wasn't it? Did you have a good time? No, I did not. I'm sure I will when I go, but this is actually, you know, it's really hard physical training. It's it leaves you really wiped out at the end of the day. And but it'll be for a good cause, because hopefully I'll be in a good enough shape that it's that I'll have a good time when I do this. And admittedly, positively, I've lost almost over 20 pounds getting ready for Philmont so far. Yeah. So getting up off of the couch is a breeze anymore. And while I still discover new muscles from time to time, when they start to ache, I have to say it's been definitely a good experience. More time with my son while we're camping, and a nice little camaraderie with the group of people that I am doing this hiking with. So overall, it's been a real positive experience. It's just been, since I am the organizer for it, it's been a lot of work, and I look forward to having not hiking every free weekend once this is done. So once in a lifetime thing, and I'm thrilled about it. But it's unfortunately, it has been taking up a large amount of my time between actual practice and configuring everything for everyone.
Yeah, and I mean, I was kind of dancing around it, but that is one of those things that has been a little bit of a scheduling.
I know, and I apologize, but it's coming to an end soon.
it happens, so, you know, we roll with it. So certainly it's an important thing to do. It's like you said, a once-in-a-lifetime type of experience. So, yeah, let's see. Haven't really played very much lately. I took a little bit of a break from Andromeda. Not for any big reason. It's just that timing happened, and I didn't have really a lot of time to sit down and play stuff. But I did wind up playing the first chapter of the Telltale Guardians of the Galaxy.
Ooh, I saw you posted that, yes.
Yeah. The first chapter, it really didn't blow me away. So I'm hoping that the story picks up, but I think part of it is that the visuals are more like the comic book, but the story is very clearly meant to be in the universe that the movies are in, kinda.
Mm-hmm.
I say kinda now very, you, very much, because it doesn't...
These were the same people that did the Walking Dead ones, right?
Yes, exactly. Because, okay. Yeah, I'm also trying to now get back to that one, because the final chapter for the current season of the Walking Dead games comes out pretty much as this is... once this is on the air, it's already out. So I want to be able to finish that one out too. But yeah, it's a little bit strange, because they're changing up their format of how they do it for these games. And like I said, it's just a little dissonant, because the voices are obviously different. They're alluding to the movie universe, but they're not following the continuity. And the visuals are a little bit off too. So it's like, okay, it's in its own little niche, but it's also not. So yeah, there's just, it's going to take a little bit of getting used to, and I think they also didn't quite hit the right notes with it. I think they think that they're, you know, there's a certain brand of humor, especially in the second movie, and I think that the game isn't quite hitting that same sense of humor, so it's a little bit of a work in progress. But yeah, that's what I've been up to largely, but then I also saw a couple movies recently. I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about those.
Oh, I just wanted to jump into games just for a second, because I don't usually, I'm not able to contribute to it.
Oh.
But for mobile games, at least on my iPhone, they've introduced the new Injustice 2 game for the mobile platform. And boy, it is detailed in a level that actually reminds me of the PS3 Injustice game on the console, because they've put so many more different controls, different types of moves and combinations into it that the first mobile game didn't have anywhere near the level of complexity. And I've been kind of stuck because it's a little hard to learn all this stuff and manage to do the three motion swipes that they want you to do on your little iPhone screen. But it's been fun. The graphics are definitely significantly improved. Some of the gameplay's different, and they've come up with new types of weapon combinations and things like that. And it's been quite a challenge to play, having been used to the having leveled out of most of my characters in the original game. It's really feels like I'm starting as a newbie all over again. So it's that equal part success and frustration. So it's been a lot of fun. But if you'd like the first one, I'd give it a try. But if you're expecting just an add-on, it is definitely not that. It is to a large extent a completely new game.
Good to know. Yeah, I like the visuals of the original game, but I'm not a real big fighting game type of player, so I usually really stink at those, just to be honest. But yeah, let's see. So movie talk. Actually, just this past weekend, I had enough time to go and see a couple movies. The first one that I saw is Alien Covenant. And how could I put this in relatively short terms? It's very much a follow-up to Prometheus, but very much a prequel to Alien. It bridges the two in a very interesting way. You can definitely tell that it started its life as a sequel to Prometheus, but you can see how it makes sense for things to progress as they do. And it's got a lot of interesting ideas in it. I think that they're executed perhaps a bit better than they were in Prometheus. Not to say that people make the most intelligent of decisions in this movie, but I think it makes more sense than, say, an entire crew of super geniuses that can't, read a map versus people who are stuck in a situation that they really never expected themselves to be in. So, and they're kind of up against something that is a lot more intelligent than they are. So it definitely was a nice improvement, I think, on Prometheus, although I am a little bit of an apologist for that movie. But it's definitely not simply action. There is a lot of layers to it that I really wasn't expecting, considering the fact that not a lot of people liked the philosophical meandering in Prometheus quite as much. I think that some people will be surprised by that. But I certainly appreciated that they went to the extra level to actually tell more of a story than simply, oh, people find aliens, get killed, the end. perhaps a telling observation is I'm not sure this is necessarily a movie that you have to see in the movie theater. I was kind of keeping an eye on that because I was like, oh, is this really something that lends itself to that experience? And quite frankly, it's not like a, say, Guardians of the Galaxy, where I really feel like seeing it on the big screen is
a benefit.
Yeah, or a benefit. This one, yeah, I didn't really get the sense of that. I felt like this is it's a small enough story that it really may be better in a more intimate setting. That, yeah, it just didn't really scream, no pun intended, see it in the movie theater. It was like, okay, yeah, this is good, this is great, this is a solid entry in the franchise, but if it was not, making a huge amount of money in the box office, I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, I never even went back and checked, but I'm fairly sure that it only did okay. And that makes sense to me. I don't think that it's the kind of movie that, as I said, really is blowing everybody away with big spectacle visuals. I think that it's it makes more sense to see it in a home setting unit, which is, yeah, I was a little surprised by that. I think that.
Yeah, usually, you know, you figure the aliens busting out here and there, and.
Yeah, there's definitely some interesting visuals at play, but like I said, it almost feels like this would be better if you were kind of stuck in a room with the lights off kind of attitude. Let me see here. I'm just going to really quickly see. Oh, yeah, it's doing much less than Prometheus did, but I don't see what it's... Well, it's made its money back, at least worldwide. Domestically, it's struggling, but... yeah. But it's made, you know, $160 million, and it was... production budget was 97, so... Eh, we'll see. Hopefully that's not going to mean that there won't be anything in the future, but it's a good one. I would see it, obviously, eventually, if I were advising people who were fans of the franchise, but I do feel like maybe the problem here is that it is definitely, it's not a huge major thing like Prometheus was, where it's, you know, visually stunning and it's good to see it in the movie theater. Now, the other movie that I saw, did you have any other questions about that one?
You said you didn't feel it was something that needed to be seen, and I'm just wondering, so did it not have that many links into the mythos, as it were?
Oh, it has a ton of them.
Oh, okay.
It not to give too much away, because they kind of said this in a lot of the early discussions about the movie, but this basically takes what you learned in Prometheus and links it directly into what we know from the early Aliens movies. So... You know, however different things seem to be, this explains at least the first major step towards what we're used to from the aliens. And, you know, the differences are explained and so forth. So it goes through a lot of motions in order to link everything up and really make Prometheus make a lot of sense within the entire franchise. And there's a lot of layers that go into that. Originally, the name of the movie was Alien Paradise Lost, which, of course, you know, invokes Milton and so forth. And there's a lot of intentional references going on in the movie. This is a more thoughtful movie. That's where, you know, like, yes, it links up to mythos. You have a lot of details about that. There's a lot of things to think about and kind of run over in your mind afterwards, that, you know, especially if you're a fan of the franchise. But it's not a huge visual spectacle like Prometheus was. Prometheus had a lot of big action set pieces that looked really awesome on the big screen. Mm-hmm. This one feels like almost like the original. It's very claustrophobic. There are some big shots, but they're not the centerpiece. To me, what really made this movie for me was the kind of undercurrent philosophically and the plot details, and I liked digging into all of that. It just, to me, it was like, almost like, you know how some of the Star Trek movies, even some good ones, feel like they could have just been, that like they were just more expensive episodes of the TV series?
Yes.
It's that kind of idea.
Okay.
Where it's not like, oh, this could only be on the big screen. No. This this could have been, say, if they made an HBO series instead of a feature film, it could have actually been probably more home in that kind of environment. So, but no, if you're a fan of Alien and you want to see like how they reconcile all the stuff, at least from, you know, the original Alien movies, not necessarily Alien versus Predator or any of that stuff, but, you know, Prometheus and how that actually does link to the other movies, yeah, this one goes a long way towards that. And on that merit alone, you may feel like, oh yeah, it was worth seeing. I'm just saying, I don't know that it's worth paying the money to go to the movie theater for.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. I literally just earlier today saw Pirates of the Caribbean: Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Would you buy stock in a movie company, John?
Yes.
Two in 1 week.
That's right. Hey, I had the time.
Okay.
And the Pirates one was more of a family excursion, because my son loves the Jack Sparrow movies. And so this one was... Well, the first thing I'll say is this. It's a bit slow. And by a bit slow, I mean that the middle act is lacking a bit of energy to the point where I was nodding off, which was not what I was expecting in a Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Now, was it because it was actually the storyline was slow, or was the actual, I don't know, the delivery, the sense of what was going on just so not interesting?
It's hard to say. I do feel like there's a certain energy lacking, in my opinion. In particular, considering that this was supposed to be like the quote-unquote final outing for Jack Sparrow and all of that, I felt like it was almost a letdown in that regard. Like, okay, it feels a bit phoned in. And if they really were trying to make him the highlight of the movie, they didn't use him nearly enough or well enough. Certainly, it does not remind me. It did not remind me of the character from the first film, where he was clearly the highlight of everything that was going on. Here, it almost felt like, I hate to say it, but it felt tacked on. Almost like you could have told this story without him. And that's a little bit surprising to me because, yeah, he is obviously the draw. He was clearly the draw even in the fourth movie, even if the fourth movie's story was not very good. In this case, you definitely get the feeling that they are trying to restart the franchise a little bit, get the blood flowing again. I don't know how well that's going to work, although the movie is apparently making gobs of money. But, yeah, I just felt very oddly bored through some of it, because it was maybe just, the end was fun, but and I will admit that it did have some good action set pieces, but at the same time, I felt like there was just something not, it wasn't doing something for me. It was like really very surprising how low-key it felt and unenergetic in some respects. Yeah, I mean, in one weekend, I mean, it's made almost 80 million in its first weekend domestically. The budget was 230, and it's worldwide made 285. So it's on track to do pretty well. I don't know if it's going to make all its money back domestically, but I don't think that matters quite as much as it used to. But, yeah, it's surprising how just, I don't know, it was, I hate to say it was boring, but at some places it was. It just seemed to be like, wow, the story's a little thin, and yeah, where are you going with this?
So you feel they've just reached a sort of dry end to it? They've pulled every gimmick they can, and
I hate to say it, but yeah, it feels like to me like they may have been better off if they just stopped after the trilogy and just not tried to do more. I forget when the last one was. I think it's been a few years since that, right? So the last one was in 2011. So this is 6 years later. And the trilogy, the original trilogy ended in 2007. So it's been 10 years since this was at the height of its popularity. And you definitely get that feeling that they're milking this a bit now. I think we all felt that way anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that's not really surprising.
No, it's not. But what I was surprised by was I felt like maybe they would at least come out of the gate with a really, you know, at least like an action popcorn type movie type of a vibe. But I even felt like, wow, I'm pretty easy to please when I know I'm walking into a popcorn movie. But this felt like, yeah, something was missing. And what's odd is that a lot of people told me that it's like, yeah, the first 20 minutes or so is kind of slow as they introduce things, but then it picks up. And I was like, what, really? You thought that was things picking up? Wow, okay. And even my son, as I said, who likes these movies, felt like it's like, yeah, the middle was really rough until they got to the point where things actually started to happen to start wrapping things up. But even then it was like, okay, you kind of know where this is going. And also, the best jokes and the best funny moments in the trailer.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. So it was a disappointment to me. I really don't feel like Alien, I'm on the fence. I would say you probably don't need to go out to the movie theater, but if you're a fan, I can definitely understand why you'd want to. I'm going to flat out say you don't need to see this in the movie theater. Pirates of the Caribbean. No, you don't need to see it in the movie theater. It's not on the same level. The first one is still clearly, to me, the best, and this is far, far from that.
okay, you know, I had a choice between Wonder Woman and Pirates later this week, so there really isn't, from what you're telling me.
No, I feel like, and that's, it's so hard to say that, because with the DC movies, they're so, there's such a bad momentum with that right now. But I feel more like there's more promise just in the trailers for Wonder Woman than there was after watching Pirates. I feel like if I told you, no, go see Pirates instead, you'd wonder what I was on. And you'd probably be disappointed by it. But I don't know how well you liked the first four, so.
Three was already starting to get a little rough.
Yeah, this is not even in that territory. It's not nearly as ponderous as three was, but it just feels like, yeah, they're just... I'll tell you, part of the problem is that, as I said, Jack Sparrow is almost, in many cases, kind of sidelined. Let me see if I can find some cast information here. So, wow, I can't even... Brenton Waltz? Waltz? What? Anyway, the main male lead, I won't say who his character is, but he is really bland. And even though I like Kaya Scodelario, I remember when she was on Skins, and then she's in the Maze Runner movies and a couple other places, then I think she's gorgeous, but she couldn't make up for the fact that the dude at the center was just generic as it gets. I thought Will Turner was a little bit... was a little stereotypical. This guy is just... meh. He does nothing for you. As far as just... he doesn't really bring a lot of presence to the table, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I mean, I'm literally just saw it today, and I'm not, like, all that blown away by it.
Okay. Well, that's...
So, yeah, take that for what you will. It was unfortunate. And certainly, if there are others who have differences of opinion on either of these movies, I'd love to hear your opinions about it. Especially for those who are huge fans of either franchise, if I'm giving either of these films a little bit of short shrift, please, by all means, let me know where your opinion is different. What I am kind of interested in already here is that I'm just looking at the percentages as far as domestic versus worldwide. And in both cases, it's interesting to note that it's almost 3-1. In the case of Alien Covenant, it's 2-1. It's you know, about 1/3 domestic, 2/3 foreign. For Pirates, it's 3-1. It's 25%, 1/4 is domestic, and the rest is all worldwide. That's pretty telling.
Well, you know, we've discussed on the show before that the domestic or American market is no longer the sole market that they're targeting things for. While, of course, China does limit the number of outside films they allow into their theaters every year from other countries, they are movie theaters sculpt the movies so that they will be approved to have a shot to get into that market. Because I believe the number somewhere, it's a low number. They only allow between 10 to 20 foreign films into the country per year to be shown. So that's why, you know, I think it's not a bad thing, but they're definitely including much more. You're seeing many more Asians in most popular movies nowadays in an effort to, break that movie into China, because if it gets into China, they know that they're going to be making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yep. I agree. So now here's an interesting thing, just because I decided to look it up. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It's more 50-50. It's actually 43% domestic, 57% foreign. But this is good news for people who are fans of Guardians of the Galaxy. In 2 weeks, I think it's been out for 2 weeks? 2 weeks? 3 weeks? 3 weeks.
That's
well,
right.
Regardless, it's still in the movie theaters, and it has already eclipsed the original in both domestic and worldwide.
Wow.
It's crushed its production budget already. So, yeah, the sequel has outmatched the original as far as Guardians of the Galaxy goes. So, gee, if anybody was wondering, hey, are they going to be able to pull it off again? Yep.
They already did. Yeah.
They already did, and how. Yeah, the budget was $200 million. They've already made domestically $340 million. And worldwide, it's almost at $800 million. So, yeah, they've pretty well kicked ass with this movie. So, good for them. Yeah, I'm trying to see. They're closing in on domestically on Deadpool. So, yeah, yeah, they're still ways away from Civil War, but yeah, they. It's actually pretty impressive. Yeah, series, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. If we just look at those movies, if it lets me click on it, which it's not. Come on, wake up. There we go. Yeah, it's currently in the fifth position. It has passed the original Guardians of the Galaxy and the original Iron Man, and it's on its way up to Civil War at this point. Yeah, it's impressive. Go Guardians.
Yeah, I'm surprised because as we reviewed it, you know, we felt that it was sort of lacking slightly, but geez, we were wrong.
I will say, though, that while we did feel that way, in the days after watching it, I've noticed that people, you know, like especially around the house and at work and stuff, it's already permeating into the public consciousness somewhat. Like some of the lines, some of the moments, certainly Baby Groot is very popular. So, yeah. But I'll say this, full out, Guardians, better than either of the movies that I just saw.
Hmm.
Very much so. Guardians I enjoyed immensely. Alien I liked on certain levels. As a fan of that mythology and so forth, but as I said, I'm a bit of a Prometheus apologist, so if I am saying that I like the fact that it's kind of a meld between the two, that's probably on that level. And then Pirates, yeah, oh wow. it was fun, but not that fun. Not nearly as fun as the original. It had its moments.
Well, as long as you're taking hits, John, there's a new Wimpy Kid movie coming out, you know, just, you know, if you just want to, you know, I'm just saying it's out today, so. Okay. Just, yeah. I figured it sounds like you're a glutton for punishment, so I figured, you know, might as well pile you on.
I've seen those other movies way too many times. There was a time when my son was into those big time, and yeah.
Okay. Just, yeah.
Nope. Next one we'll see is probably Wonder Woman. I think that's a pretty good bet. All right, well, I think that that's a good place for us to end this particular episode. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add from our last couple weeks?
Well, not necessarily add from our last few weeks, but we did not actually hit the in memoriam section in our news, and I definitely feel that this gentleman deserves it. So,
yes, I think he deserves it. Yeah. I was just trying, I kind of was putting the in memoriam out of my mind since it is actually fairly sad news, but if you don't mind picking this one up.
Yeah, and you're saying it's sad news, and we hear about death sometimes, and we feel that, oh gosh, you know, if only they were able to do more with their life. But the actor we're talking about is Roger Moore, of course, my first James Bond, and he passed on at the age of 89. He had a short bout of cancer, as reported, so it wasn't a long ongoing thing. But, you know, he's also known very well for the Saint TV series that came out, as well as all his charitable works, which actually earned him a knighthood back in the early 90s. He's played in several films and actually, you know, had been a contract player at MGM Studios all the way back in the 50s, working with the likes of even Elizabeth Taylor. So he definitely has had a varied career over the years, multiple James Bond movies before he was eventually supplanted in that, and was married several times, and had as best he's said, he had a very nice life. So we wish him well. We wish our best thoughts to his family, of course, and it's sad to see him go. As I said, at 89, it's at least he's had a full life, a great career, and helped others along the way. So you can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly true. I mean, he definitely had a full life. He brought a lot to the table for a lot of us, and he will be well remembered. I think that it's unfortunate that Edmund couldn't be with us for this particular story, because I think he'd have a lot to say.
I know. You think to yourself, what's it like to be a star at his level? And yeah, I realize he's not the most popular at this point. But when you actually, you know, sort of transcend not only, for example, English culture or even American culture, but he could go worldwide and you'd be instantly recognized. You know, I wonder, you know, is that humbling? Is that does that inflate your head beyond belief? It always seemed to me that he did seem, I wouldn't say he always stayed grounded per se, but it seemed that unlike some stars, he seemed to acknowledge that and sort of realize that he had a slight responsibility to carry himself properly and not go to extremes because, you know, and take advantage of that publicity, and he used it, as I said, to further charitable works. And, you know, it wasn't only the James Bond. It was a lot of the sort of quirky things he did. Like, I believe he appeared in Cannonball Run and, you know, some other movies where he definitely milked his popularity for the amusement of fans. And I don't mind when stars do that. I think, you know, stars are out there to entertain people. And if they can do it in a serious medium or a funny medium, it's still entertaining. So.
I think that's true. And yeah, he obviously had a very, he had a varied career, and we remember him from a lot of different productions, you know, James Bond, obviously, but The Saint and other things such as that. So it's, as I said, it's unfortunate Edwin couldn't be here. He would probably be able to just run off a litany of things that Roger Moore has done over the years. So yes, unfortunately coming, you know, ending this particular episode, yeah, a little bit of a down note, but again, it's we should celebrate just how much he brought to the table. And I'm sure that we will hear quite a lot about his works on the Hooked on Bond podcast at the Vogue Network, which Edmund was a part of. So they will be getting eventually to the Roger Moore films. And so if you want to hear their thoughts on his work, that would be a good place to go.
Oh, yeah. Those, you know, I don't consider myself a Bond aficionado by any point of view, but I consider that I do know a few things. But no, I really don't. I've listened to two of the podcasts and I'm like, oh my gosh, they know so much more than I do. And definitely, if you want to, you know, get sort of get a sense of or dig into the movies in much more detail, yeah, find them and give them a little bit of a listen. I usually don't pimp a lot of other shows on here, but geez, they just know so much and they're so passionate about the various works of Bond, be it the movies or the novels, that I can't recommend it enough if you have any interest in the subject.
And on that note, we're going to go ahead,
yes,
and wrap this one up. When we come back next time, we are going to have the first of two episodes worth of episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.